Welcome to BioTime, a podcast to help you pass high school biology and understand the science of life. My name is Chris, and I'm your host today. Hey guys, welcome to this podcast on the origins of life. So one of the biggest questions scientists are trying to understand today is there life outside of planet Earth? And we can see that NASA has dedicated much of its efforts in space missions to trying to find life. And it's quite fair, as it would be nice to know if we have some neighbors out there in the universe. But let's first step back. We have life on Earth, and as you know, we're here. But how did we get here? Right, we know that 13.8 billion years ago, our universe was exploded into existence. But from that point on, how did life eventually form? And so today, we're going to be talking about the origins of life on Earth. We'll be looking into some hypotheses of how life came to be and evidence that we have to support them. Alrighty, so life on Earth made its first appearance about roughly 3.7 billion years ago, and the form of life that we had were microbes, and they left their presence in surrounding rocks. And the reasons we were able to learn when life first originated is through studying rock samples by radiometric dating. And it said we were able to find a unique carbon atom through radiometric dating. And this unique carbon atom is produced by living things. All right, so it's not only these studies of traces of carbon molecules that hint to us about life's origins, but we can also find evidence of early life through physical structures. And one of our earliest examples that we can see are in stromatolites, which we believe have begun their journey on planet Earth around 3.5 billion years ago. So these stromatolites are layered sedimentary formations that are created mainly by photosynthetic microorganisms such as cyanobacteria and sulfate-reducing bacteria. And if you want to see stromatolites for yourself, salty lagoons and bays in Australia, Mexico, and the Bahamas have many stromatolite formations for you to look at. And when you think about it, it's quite crazy, as if you're seeing one of these formations, you're looking at something that was alive around 3.7 billion years ago, and that is a pretty darn long time. All right, so now that we have learned when life came to be, how did it come to be? All right, so today, we're not really going to have a definitive answer, but we do have multiple hypotheses. And the first one that we're going to be talking about is the Oparin-Haldane hypothesis. So the Oparin-Haldane hypothesis was introduced in 1924 by Russian scientist Alexander Oparin, and then in 1929, English scientist J.B.S. Haldane proposed theories on the origins of life also. And it's important to note that their proposals were entirely separate of each other. Their names were grouped together in the hypothesis because their proposals were combined to form the Oparin-Haldane hypothesis as we know it today. And so this Oparin-Haldane hypothesis believes that life billions of years ago emerged from a series of step-by-step reactions where inorganic matter interacts with large forms of energy to produce the building blocks of life. So essentially, they believe that inorganic material, when in contact with high energy forms, can create compounds like amino acids and nucleotides. And today we know that amino acids make up proteins and, you know, nucleotides make up DNA, and all of which are essential to life. And as we can see, inorganic matter is being turned into life. And we refer to this process as abiogenesis. Abiogenesis refers to the idea that life could have evolved from inorganic matter, or in other words, non-living substances. Oparin and Haldane both believed that the atmosphere in which this abiogenesis occurred was in a reducing atmosphere. All right, so a reducing atmosphere is an atmosphere where oxidation can not occur. All right, remember, reducing is the gaining of electrons, and oxidation is the losing of electrons. And I remember this with the acronym OIL RIG. So OIL stands for oxidation is losing, and RIG stands for reduction is gaining. So a reducing atmosphere, it is a little complicated to understand for our case, but all we really need to know is that a reducing atmosphere has little to no oxygen in it. All right, so now that we have discussed some points here, let's start talking about some terms that are individual to Oprin and Haldinas. Remember, these points that we just talked about earlier are this grouped hypothesis of Oprin's ideas and Haldane's ideas together. So now we're going to look at some of Oprin's own ideas and Haldane's own ideas. So Oprin believed that the earliest life forms developed from something called coacervids, which are small liquid droplets that are made up of two or more different types of liquids that will not form a homogeneous solution. And in other words, this just means that there are many different types of liquids present, but they will not evenly mix together. And an example of this that I think that we should all know, it's like, you know, if you mix water and oil together, this is a non-homogeneous solution, as the water and the oil are not going to mix. So Oprin believed that in these droplets of solution, which are called coacervids, was where life was first able to form. And Oprin's idea here about how these early building blocks of life were formed in these liquid-like solutions helped to establish the hypothesis as we know it today. The overall combined hypothesis believes that simple organic molecules reacted with high-energy sources like the light, like lightning or the sun, to form building blocks of life. And once they were formed, these building blocks of life, they accumulated in the ocean or some aqueous solution. And this mixture of amino acids and nucleotides in this like watery solution was referred to as a prebiotic soup. All right, and the hypothesis states that with time, the building blocks of life reacted with each other to form bigger and more complex things like proteins and nucleic acids. And with even more time, possibly billions of years, these structures came together to form life as we know it today. All right, but this hypothesis does have many holes in it. And one of them is that, remember how earlier I mentioned that the Oprin-Haldane hypothesis relies upon the fact that the atmosphere was reducing. Or in other words, it was practically absent of oxygen, and this has been proven incorrect. Oprin and Haldane had believed that the atmosphere was full of methane, but experiments performed today have showed that there's actually significant amounts of water vapor, CO2, and sulfur dioxide, and these are all very prevalent in the atmosphere. So if anything, they were actually like pretty darn far off, because they thought that the atmosphere was reducing, but it's quite oxidative, and so they're pretty far off. All right, so let's move on to discussing a very famous experiment that also helped to reveal evidence about how life formed. All right, the Miller-Urey experiment was one of the most groundbreaking experiments in the history of scientific research. So in 1953, two American chemists, Stanley Miller and Harold Urey, got together at the University of Chicago to test if it was possible for amino acids to be formed under similar conditions to what the ancient Earth was like. And so they created a simulator that was able to emulate conditions of the Earth billions of years ago. And their simulator was essentially this closed system with a heated pool of water at the bottom, and it was filled with a mixture of gases that they had believed to have been in the atmosphere in ancient times. So the mixture of gases or consisted of ammonia, water vapor, methane, and hydrogen gas. And so with this pool of water at its base and these gases in the simulator, they realized, oh, we're missing one more thing. Billions of years ago, the weather on planet Earth was pretty darn terrifying, and it was really rough. There was a lot of lightning. And the reasoning behind why we know there was so much lightning is that we know that when you have an increased amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, it makes it easier for lightning to occur. And we know that if we were to transport ourselves back in time a couple billion years, the atmosphere was filled with around 25 to 50% CO2. And if you transfer yourself back to present day, we find that CO2 only makes up about 0.4% of the atmosphere. So really, 25 to 50% versus 0.4% is a very, very big difference. So since Miller and Urey knew of the prevalence of lightning back then, they knew that they had to simulate lightning. And they did this by sending sparks into this system. And after allowing their simulator to run, they found something astonishing. They had created amino acids, sugars, lipids, and other organic molecules essential to life. And this discovery was so groundbreaking, they created an entire new field of chemistry called prebiotic chemistry. Something that is important to note is that there were some inaccuracies in the experiment. As in recent times, scientists have found that the composition of gases in the atmosphere back in ancient times were slightly different from the conditions that Miller and Urey had used. But even after retesting, the same results were still found, and it's that these amino acids, these other organic compounds, could still be created. And while so many aspects of this experiment are just wildly fascinating, what I found the most interesting is that Miller and Urey's experiment created more than 20 amino acids. And hear this, some of the amino acids they created actually do not naturally occur in the genetic code. All right, so let's move on to discussing our final topic, which is the RNA world hypothesis. And this hypothesis was developed in the late 1960s. The RNA world hypothesis states that life on Earth began with simple RNA molecules that can self-replicate. So essentially, early life on our planet only used RNA to store genetic information. Let's step back for a second. Remember how in the Oprah and Haldane experiment, they proposed that organic compounds like amino acids and nucleotides were formed in water to form a prebiotic soup? Well, the RNA world hypothesis builds off of the Oprah and Haldane experiment. So this RNA world hypothesis believes that RNA was formed in a prebiotic soup. And with many, many different types of compounds floating around in the solution, it is believed that chains of RNA were formed, and then they were broken, and then they were formed, and they were broken, until at one point, with enough time, enough luck, and with probability, it allowed for a more stable form of RNA to be created. And as natural selection began to do its job, we were left with RNA that was actually able to self-replicate. As you know, if you could self-replicate, you're probably the ones that are going to survive. All right. So now that we have this self-replicating RNA, even more time passes. And next thing you know, DNA has taken over the genetic scene. And this occurred because RNA is not as stable as DNA. This is very critical to understand. RNA is not as stable as DNA. And the reason why RNA is more unstable is because it has an extra hydroxyl group compared to DNA. And having an extra hydroxyl group makes it much, much easier for hydrolysis to occur. And in case you don't know what hydrolysis is the process where water interacts with the compound to break a bond, right? So think about it. Long story short, if you have a hydroxyl group, water is likely going to come break you up. And so since we know that this RNA has this hydroxyl group, it is more unstable than DNA. But that's not the only reason. There is one more. Another reason behind why DNA took over was because DNA is more easily repairable than RNA. Alrighty, so let's get on with a quick recap before we end the episode. So life on Earth began around 3.7 billion years ago, and we're able to find traces of life because of carbon left in rock, and some of the earliest fossils we can look at to analyze early life is seen in stromatolites. Right, remember, stromatolites are structures that are the result of layered photosynthetic organisms, cyanobacteria, and sulfate-reducing bacteria. There were a couple of hypotheses that we talked about today, and we talked about the Oprah-Haldane hypothesis. And this believes that life billions of years ago emerged from a series of step-by-step reactions where inorganic matter interacts with large forms of energy to produce the building blocks of life. And large forms of energy came in contact with different compounds, and they ended up forming amino acids and nucleotides. All right, so a key vocab word we should have down is abiogenesis. Abiogenesis refers to the idea that life could have evolved from inorganic matter or non-living substances. Oprin and Haldane both believed that the atmosphere back in ancient times was a reducing atmosphere, or in other words, absent of oxygen, but this was later disproved as we now know that it was actually an oxidizing atmosphere billions of years ago. Alright, so the Oprin-Haldane hypothesis believed that after the high forms of energy, such as lightning, came into contact with compounds to form amino acids and other building blocks, a prebiotic soup was formed. And this prebiotic soup was believed to be in the ocean, and then the compounds eventually reacted together inside of this ocean to form life as we know it. Alright, so now about 30 years later after Oprin-Haldane's work, Miller and Urey held an experiment. So Miller and Urey set up a simulator that emulated the Earth's condition billions of years ago and found that amino acids, sugars, lipids, and other molecules were formed, and their discovery was so groundbreaking that they created an entirely new field of chemistry called prebiotic chemistry. Alright, and onto the final topic we're going to recap is the RNA world hypothesis. The RNA world hypothesis states that life on Earth began with simple RNA molecules that can self-replicate. So essentially, early life on our planet only used RNA to store genetic information. The RNA world hypothesis believes that amino acids floating around in the prebiotic soup reacted together to form RNA. And as time went on, DNA took over the genetic scene due to being more stable and being more easily repairable than RNA. That wraps it up for this podcast on the origins of life. Thanks for listening, everyone.